It's Wednesday, the 8th of June, 2016. Happy birthday to Big Country Bryant Reeves. Basketball Monster Show brought to you by Fantrax and ADG1524. My name is Josh Lloyd, and if you want to be a sponsor of the podcast like ADG1524, it's easy. Leave a review on iTunes and you get to help the show out and you get to be a sponsor of the show. So thank you to ADG1524. We're going to be looking at the Indiana Pacers and their season in review podcast today. But before we get into that, just a couple of things. The Red Rock 30 Team Dynasty League is full. You have received your email telling you that you're in. Obviously, the details and the details are scant in those emails. More information will be coming up soon, including links to the league, which will be hosted on Fantrax, the sponsor of this podcast. What I'm looking to do with it at the moment is have it as a $50 buy-in for the league prize distribution. We're going to have the winner. Well, let's have everyone who makes the playoffs is going to get some cash out of this. If you lose in the first round, it'd be 16-team playoffs. If you lose in the first round, you get $30. Lose in the second round, you get $70. If you make the last four, you get $100. The runner-up gets $200, and the champion gets $580. I think that's a relatively fair way of distributing the funds. Again, you will get all these details in your emails when they come out in the next few days, officially setting the league up. I had so much interest in this league. So many. I have got just stacks and stacks of applications that unfortunately I wasn't able to get those people into the league. But what that means that I'm going to do is I'm going to run a second league, exactly the same. Another Red Rock 30 team dynasty league. There's still going to be another Red Rock 30 team salary cap league that's coming later, but I'm going to duplicate this league, the 30 team league, where in that first round everyone chooses an NBA team and one player from each NBA team must be drafted in the first round. We're going to do a second one of those leagues. So, the people who have already sent me applications, you don't need to apply again. Your applications are still there. But if you are still interested and you're just catching up on the podcasts, we're going to be doing a second league like this. I'm going to cut off applications at Sunday. Let's say Sunday will be the last day for applications for this second league. So if you are interested in joining a 30-team Red Rock Dynasty League, send the applications through to redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. That is my email address. Send them through there and you will be in consideration. But just a warning again is that I've already got more applications than I have spots in this second league. So there are going to be people that miss out, and I do apologize that. I want to try and get as many people in as possible, but we will be doing a third 30-team dynasty, this real salary cap league as well, which will come up in the next few weeks. But this is going to be that same 30-team dynasty, 30 teams, 13-player rosters, one player from each team. When we go through the draft, you will get, and I've described this before, but I'll do it again, you get a selection. So in terms of, you don't get allocated, you've got first pick, you get first choice of where you want to pick. And if you pick the first spot, you get to pick any NBA team you want, and you get to pick one player from that team. But that means that if you pick the first spot, that means that in every other round you pick last. So in essence, you get pick one, but then you get pick 60, pick 90, pick 120. Now, whether that's something you enjoy, cool. You might say, you get the first choice, I'm going to take pick 30. I'll get the last NBA team. So everyone else can pick their team. I get whatever's left over. I pick a player from that team. But then I get pick 31, and then I get pick 61, and then I get pick 91. And that might be what you want to do. So there's a lot of strategy to that. That's the way that league runs. If you're interested, again, submit your applications. If you've already submitted, no need to do it again. I do have all those applications still here. And I've got more than I've got spots. So again, some people will be miss out. But if you are interested in this league, please send me an email. In the second league, Kyle McEwen from Basketball Monster will be joining me in that league too. So yeah, you'll be taking on both of us from Basketball Monster in that second league. If I didn't mention already, this league is going to be hosted on Fantrax. And you know Fantrax. You should know Fantrax by now because it is the best place to host any of your fantasy leagues. It might be basketball, but it might be football. It might be baseball. It might be hockey. It might be college basketball. It might be college football. It might be golf. It might be NASCAR. It might be something else that I'm missing. There's lots of options on Fantrax. It is the best option for any casual league, the most customization that you could possibly see on any sort of league. Plus, there's a premium option, a premier commissioner mode, which gives you just ridiculous options. If you're running a dynasty in a keeper league, you shouldn't be messing around on any other site. You should go straight to Fantrax. The ability to do custom draft orders, include salaries, include contracts, include minor leagues, include European players, include college players in the NBA league. So many things that you're able to do on Fantrax. I do encourage you to check them out and check out Fantrax. It is clearly, the site's had a massive revamp. It looks clean as everything is being polished up. Looks great, ready for this season. Check it out. You won't be disappointed, because you know what? You have to wait for Yahoo to open. You have to wait for ESPN to open. ESPN didn't open until, I think, about the 1st of October last year. You don't have to wait for Fantrax. Your leagues are open now. If you wanted to, well, I don't think it's a smart idea, but if you wanted to, you could draft now for next season in Fantrax. Everything's ready to go. There is no downtime. You have a dynasty league on Yahoo or on ESPN and you want to do trades in the offseason, good luck. You can't do it. It just doesn't allow you to do it. Leagues are shut down. It doesn't happen on Fantrax. Everything is ready to go. The league rolls over. Everything can be managed for you. So if you want to get into this league on Fantrax, send me an email, redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Michael Bolton sitting over here waiting in the wings. He's giving me the wind-up, so
let's get to it.
Thanks, Mick. We're going to talk Indiana Pacers after that spiel on the Dynasty Leagues. Where are we? Pacers. Interesting season. They obviously lost some talent with David West moving on, Roy Hibbert getting traded out. But the big story and the big success from this season was Paul George, and his return from that leg injury. I'll get onto all these players individually in a sec. But 45-37 for the Indiana Pacers. They got into the playoffs. They took the Raptors to 7 games and looked pretty impressive. But overall, they weren't great. I don't even know if it's hard to say they were good. They were average, maybe. That's the best way of saying the way that the Pacers played. They've got a long way to go. Curious decision to fire Frank Vogel, to not renew his contract, and he replaced by Nate McMillan. Larry Bird's got it in his head, we have to play small. And Frank Vogel started to do that and then reverted. And he wants to play fast and he wants to play small. I'm not sure how that really works with Nate McMillan, given he's never been able to play fast at any time throughout his coaching career. But that must have been what he sold Larry Bird on. I'll play fast, Larry. I'll play small. So that means I think we're going to see a lot more Paul George at the four than we did this season. And it wasn't great for George. George definitely didn't like it. Now, whether that makes him disgruntled in Indiana, we'll have to wait and see. But you can imagine a slightly different play style with Vogel gone, with McMillan coming in, and with Bird obviously having some sort of assurances from McMillan that he's going to play the way that Larry wants him to play. It's a bit of a weird situation to me that you force a coach to play a certain way. I would think you hire a coach who coaches and plays in a certain style, and you work from there. But it seems an odd thing when your best player is really adverse to playing in that position. Maybe Larry Bird knows more and thinks that George is going to really fly in that sort of spot, which he very well may do. But it's still an odd situation to piss off your best player when you're in, let's be honest, not the greatest market, not the best market, not the biggest market in the NBA. And if he gets disgruntled enough and his contract's up, well, we could be seeing Paul George in another uniform. There's been trade rumors about him already. The trade of Paul George to the Lakers for that number 2 pick and D'Angelo Russell or whatever it was. It is just, come on. It's stupid. If it happens, then the Pacers are beyond brain dead and Bird should be fired, which won't happen. But you cannot trade Paul George in that sort of situation. It would be unbelievably ludicrous for that to happen. But hey, dumber things have happened, like Andrea Bargnani going for an unprotected first round pick. That's a dumb thing. They have pick 20 in this draft. They have pick 50 in this draft. You're not going to find game changers at those spots. Hey, you might, but odds are you probably won't. So I wouldn't be getting too excited for Pacers fans. But getting a pick at pick 20, there's a lot of depth in this draft, a lot of interesting international prospects, and they might be able to get themselves someone who's a contributor, a rotation player at best. Maybe turn into a good starter, but maybe not, but a solid rotation piece is easily being able to be found at pick 20. Now, this is something I should have done at the start of the show. I wanted to announce all the 30 participants in the Red Rock Dynasty League, the first one. So I'm going to do it now. First, you've got myself. You know me. I'm Josh Lloyd. Cool. The next one, we've got Jordan Schiltz, and Jordan runs DynastyBasketball.com or DynastyBball.com, a Dynasty website, so he runs that. I've got Brian Gibberman, who writes at Hardwood Paroxysm, amongst other places. There is Sammer from Six Man Dynasty. There's Ryan from Fantasy Sports Addicts Anonymous. There is Tom from Fantasy Sports Addicts Anonymous. And then we go through some other listeners. And all these people are listeners to the podcast. They're not just people I've plucked from other websites. They're people who have started their own websites and have been listening to this podcast for quite a while. We've got Danny Reed, who's in as well. Daniel Charles. Joseph Diffenbach, who you would have heard his name mentioned plenty of times on the show. Seth Klein, who plenty of you would have known as a guest host on this program lots of times. Trent Copeland, who guest hosted one of the podcasts as well. Ben Clark, Christos Paraskevas, James Gibson, Rob Percher. I always forget how to pronounce your name, Rob. I'm sorry. Stephen Vitales, Xavier Guino, who you did hear as a winner of one of the Red Rock Listener Leagues last season. Benjamin Bade, Joe Buck, Adrian Benjamins, Darren Perry, Aaron Zimmerman, Kevin D'Angelo, John Murphy, Dimitri Chiritsis, James Conlon, Jesse Sutton, Adam Cosgrove, Andrew De Silva, and rounding out the 30 is Heath Moss. So congratulations to all you 30 guys who are in that league room. And again, there's going to be another 30 spots opening up, so get your applications in if you have not done that just yet. Let's talk players. Let's talk Indiana Pacers, guys, and let's get into them in that little bit of extra detail, which we love to do in these shows. Paul George. I'll be honest with Paul George. When we had him projected pretty high on Basketball Monster, because all his stats, yes, they were going to look as good as they were, but I was shit scared about dealing with him and dealing with the injury, and having seen so many people have to deal with these open fractures, multiple fractures to both bones in the leg, they don't come back. Oh, sorry, they don't come back the same player. They come back in a long time, and it takes them a while to get better. And we saw George return at the end of last season, played those six games, then dealt with some other muscle injuries on his leg as well, which is a real telltale sign that something's not right. And I was concerned. I wasn't wasting a second-round pick on Paul George. No chance. Because I was worried about how this injury was going to hold up and whether he was still going to be the same player, whether there was going to be repercussions. Paul George started off the season just ludicrously on fire, shooting the lights out from everywhere, and I look like a massive knob for being, I don't want anything to do with Paul George. In the end, yeah, he cooled off and suffered that hamstring injury early in the season, which was a little bit of a concern, but played through pretty much the whole season. He did admit, I've got a lot of leg pain, and it's still bothering me. It just shows how good of a player this guy can be, that he can play through those sort of injuries and pain and put up the sort of performance that he did. He finished the season as the 14th ranked player in 9 cat leagues and the 12th ranked player in 8 cat leagues. And that's sort of about that spot where he was being drafted. So he didn't return you great value. He didn't hurt you in value though. But in a punting situation, he had some pretty negative areas. He was 7th in 8 cat and 8 minus 2 ranking. That's pretty impressive. Now, over the course of the season, he played 88 games, including playoffs. But in the previous podcast, I haven't included playoff stats, but I've lumped it all together here. He played 35 minutes a game and averaged 23.5 points. He hit 2.6 triples. He had 7 rebounds and over 4 assists. He's at 1.9 steals, half a block, and went 42-87. Now, the 42% on 18 attempts is really what dragged him down, and that was a big, big part of, you know, sort of a drop-off in his game, and he was shooting sub-40% for some time in December and January. 42% is not great. It's not great for a guy who's an on Yahoo. He had triple eligibility, shooting guard, small forward, power forward. Let's be honest, he's never playing shooting guard again, so that eligibility needs to go. But as a power forward, shooting 42% on 18 attempts, it's obviously not ideal. But for him to come back and do what he did, and discounting last season, but he scored more points per game than his last healthy season, hit more threes, grabbed more rebounds, had more assists, had the same steals, got more blocks, and shot just slightly worse from the field, and slightly better from the free throw line. He also took his 3-point percentage up to 38. So everything that Paul George did was really, really impressive. He comfortably led this team in win shares. He was second on the team in win shares per 48 minutes. He was an absolute monster in terms of box score plus minus on this team. He was 4.5, which comfortably led the team offensively and defensively. Defensive win shares he led the team in. He had a PER of 20.9, a true shooting of 56%, led the team in VORP. He did absolutely everything that he needed to do. And once he's played a full season, I don't think I've got... Well, I know that I've got no concerns about his leg moving forward. He was able to play through the pain. He was able to play through muscle concerns to do with that. And it's great to see... You don't want to see these things be a permanent issue. So it's great to see Paul George get out there and actually take his game up to a new level, which is something I was not expecting in the slightest, but it happened. Well done. Super stuff from Paul George. And if you bit the bullet last year and picked him in that second round, it paid off. It was a risk, and it was a risk I wasn't willing to take. In a dynasty league, I would have been a little bit more happy to do that. But even then, I still had concerns that he could ever become a top 20 player again just because of the leg problem. And in terms of even games played, but to play as many games as he did, he missed one game during the regular season. It is a tremendous, tremendous effort from Paul George, and I'm pretty sure I can't say that any more times than I already have. Monte Ellis. Actually, you know what? I'm all over the place with today's podcast. I forgot to do the free agency look ahead for this team. Let's do it now. Jan Mihimi is an unrestricted free agent. Jordan Hill is an unrestricted free agent. Solomon Hill, bafflingly, is an unrestricted free agent. They declined a rookie option on him. You should never do that on a player. He was due to make like $1.5 million. And then he played meaningful minutes down the stretch and in the playoffs. He will not sign with this team because they can't offer him a big contract. Because that's one of the things, if you decline a rookie option, you can only offer, I think, 100, and, oh, I could be way off here, but I think it's only 110% of what they were due to earn in that rookie deal. So he's going to get offered $8 million a year somewhere. He will not be with the Pacers. Bad decision. And Ty Lawson's an unrestricted free agent. Speaking of bad decisions, unlikely to me that Mihinmi's back. Hill might be back. Ty Lawson, who knows? Who knows anything about Ty Lawson at this point? And Solly Hill won't be back. We've got Shane Whittington with a non-guaranteed deal. Same with Glenn Robinson III. And neither of those guys did really anything to make us think that they're absolute locks to remain on this roster. Let's get back now to Monte Ellis, who signed a new contract with the Pacers, which in hindsight is going to look pretty bad. I reckon he's 30 years old. He's still got two more years left at $21 million and then a player option at almost $12 million as well. Look, the money's not too bad, but when Monte Ellis hits 34 years old, paying him $12 million, it's probably not going to look all that appealing. How was his season? Well, it was okay. He finished 72nd in 9 cat leagues. He finished 58th in 8 cat leagues. But worse than last season. And at his age of 30, once you start going backwards, you feel like you're just going to take a step back of 10 spots pretty much every year. And that's sort of what I anticipate from Monte. He played 34 minutes a game and averaged 13.7 points. He hit 1.1 threes, and that's not a strength of his game, as you would well know. 3.5 rebounds, 4.7 assists, which led the team. 1.9 steals, 43-79 as percentages. But he's a 31% three-point shooter. We know he's a bit of a ball hog. But in terms of shot attempts, he was well down this year. His last two seasons in Dallas, he averaged 15.5 and 17 shots, only 12.5 per game this season in basically the same amount of minutes. It's one of his lowest scoring seasons that he's ever had, but he did take his assist numbers up close to 5, and he played a lot of de facto point guard on this team with George Hill alternating that role, but Alice just does dominate the ball. Is he a good player? He's okay. Is he going to be worth that contract in 2 years' time, in 1 year's time? No. Was it a move the Pacers had to make? I don't necessarily think they did have to make it. I thought that it was a weird decision at the time, but they made it. Now, he finished fourth on this team in win shares, but he had a below average win shares per 48, which is never a good sign. He was barely above average in defensive box score plus minus at 0.3 and was actually a negative on the offensive end. He was a below average in his PER, had just a 50.4 true shooting percentage, which is a terrible, terrible number as well, and used 21% of the team's possessions, which is one of the highest numbers on the team. What do you do with Monte Ellis? Offensively, he is a real, real concern. But the problem is who do you have to replace him? At this point, you have no one, unless you're going to attract someone in free agency. But to me, he's not a great fit with guys like George Hill. He had an okay in terms of his on-off numbers, a 1.7. Paul George led the team at 4.6. And 1.7 is okay, but it's obviously not spectacular. I imagine Alice, you look at him 58 for the 8-cat full season, I think you see him as a 68 guy next year, and then slowly declining. I wouldn't be picking him anywhere inside the top 6 rounds. I think that after that, it's fine and he's probably going to return value, but there's definitely no upside in it. And there's a chance that he slips even further. But to think that someone's going to come in and take his minutes, given the way that things are currently structured with this team, it feels unlikely that someone's going to come in and push Monte Ellis to a bench role, to a 24-minute-a-game role. That just doesn't seem like it's something that will happen this season. It could, but I just don't see them getting someone at pick 20 who's going to come in and go, yeah, I'm the shooting guard, and Monte, you can sit on your bum for the next 82 games. I just don't think that's going to happen. So I think his role is relatively secure for this season. And that's where you look at it in Dynasty. Maybe he drops that bit, but then the drop-off's going to come after that, probably the season after, where he might not be a top 100 player. That would be my estimation on Monte at this point. Georgie Hill had an absolutely red-hot end to last season when he was carrying this team, and he can do it. And that, to me, proves that, yes, he can do it. But when Paul George returns with the addition of Monte Ellis, George Hill takes a back seat. And he's still a really efficient point guard. He's exceptionally so in 9-cat leagues. 78th in 9-cat leagues. He was 90th in 8-cat leagues. But last year, he was the 32nd ranked player in 9-cat leagues because he was doing so much for this team. But he took a step back. In terms of his advanced numbers, well, he was second on the team in win shares. He is a key cog on this team. He's a plus defender. He's a plus on offense. He was the second on this team in VORP. He had a below average PER, but a nice 56% true shooting percentage. He is a very, very, very underrated point guard. It doesn't translate great to fantasy, but he's still a guy that's a clear top 100 player, and a lot of people don't necessarily buy into that with George Hill. He played 81 games. Again, this is all including the playoffs. 34 minutes a night, 12.2 points, but he hit 1.7 threes, and he converted those at 41%. 3.9 rebounds, 3.4 assists, 1.1 steals, and he went 45% from the field and 77% from the line. So just super efficient. And I talked about the 9-cat bump. He was only 1.3 turnovers. That is just insanely low as a point guard. Yes, he did dish out 3.4 assists as a starting point guard, which is third on the team behind Ellis and George. And I really would prefer the ball in Hill's hands than Monte Ellis's. I think that, you know, you could get someone else at that shooting guard spot, and I'd much prefer Hill having it. But Hill is a spot-up shooter as well. Works pretty well in terms of, you know, he shot 41% from three. Monte shot 31. And his defense is pretty impressive as well. So he's a guy that I think is really, really underrated in NBA circles. And for fantasy, he just gives you what he gives you. He's that player that's ranked in the 70s, in the 90s there, you see, in 8-cat leagues. And it will not be a player who you should be, you know, striving after in the first 5 rounds or 6 rounds. But if you're looking for just some depth, some efficient shooting, some three-pointers, some decent numbers, but nothing spectacular, he's fine to grab. But to me, he's not a player that, despite finishing 78th in 9-cat leagues, I'm more likely looking at him in the 80s or 90s. That's probably the right spot for him for me. Just given what he does, it's solid and the upside's not really there. So when you get into the 100s, that's more upside picking to me. But George Hill is just solid. No one's taking his role. I think that's fair to say at this point. I do really like him as a player, and he's on a pretty cheap contract. But he is an unrestricted free agent the season after. He's only on $8 million next season, and he will be 31 years old by the end of next season. So there's a little bit of a concern there is, what do they do? And we'll talk about the maybe not the potential replacement, but a guy who I think's got a fair bit to prove or a fair bit to show in this league, and that's Mighty Joe Young, who it could be an interesting player to look at in Dynasty Leagues when we remember that Hill is going to be 32 years old when his contract expires and he's only got 1 year left on that deal. So that's something that we can think about. George Hill, he took big steps back because of the return of George, because of the addition of Ellis. So when you look at his stats, it's no surprise to see all those things, you know, really drop down. Yan Mahimi. I drafted Yan Mahimi in a couple of leagues. In punt free throw situations is really where you needed to target him, because he was going to get the minutes as the starting center on this team, and he was really, really impressive. He finished second on the team with a 3.9 on off number. He was 97th ranked in 9-cat leagues, and I didn't have to draft him at pick 97, I know that much. 103rd in 8-cat leagues. And even when we look at his punting numbers, it gets even better. So 85 in a 9-2 and 91 in an 8-2 because of that poor free throw percentage. Mahimi had a career season. He played 78 games. He did deal with some back problems during the season. 78 games, only 26 minutes a night, and he still found himself just around that 100 mark. 9.2 points, and that's not why you drafted him. You drafted him because he gave you 7 rebounds, he gave you 0.9 steals, he blocked a shot, and he shot 58% from the field, and you know, 60%, 59% from the line is not ideal. But nice rebounding, nice blocks, really high field goal percentage. So he was a nice end-of-your-bench sort of acquisition who you'd have on the roster, you'd have him off the roster, you'd move him back and forth. But enough that he is going to get a pretty significant contract next season that's going to be more than the $4 million that he was paid this season. Defensively, he was a real factor. He was equal second with George Hill in win shares on this team and led the team in win shares per 48, as long as we're excluding Raheem Christmas's 6 minutes that he played. In terms of defensive box score plus minus, Mahimi was far and away the leader on this team in that metric, and was and finished with a pretty decent box score plus minus, actually second on the team behind Paul George. Nice VORP, above average PER, big true shooting percentage, big rebounding percentages. He was a big surprise to many, but took advantage of the role, and it could have been bigger if he was playing 30 minutes a night. Then, and we saw that at stages when he got to those extra minutes, the numbers really started to come. Now, whether he ends up on another team, which is a big possibility, and I think it's a pretty decent possibility, whether he ends up as the Bulls starting center, the Lakers starting center, he could find himself playing 30 minutes a night and really becoming a player who, despite the poor free throw percentage, the attempts are pretty low. So they're not that low. They're 3.2 a game, but that's still, it can be worked around. And anything over, if it's a negative 3 in Z-score, you forget about it. You might as well just punt that category. He's a negative 1.22, so it is recoverable from. You can get someone who, you add DeMar DeRozan to that, you add James Harden compared there, and you're done. You add a couple of other solid free throw shooters, you've covered it. But he's still a guy that his value jumps in a punt free throw sort of build. But he might sign with the Blazers, who we talked about yesterday, and just provide some real rim protection for these guys and some very solid defense as a big man. And yes, he's old, but I think he still can be a decent player for the next 2 to 3 years. So I really liked what I saw from Mahimi. I wouldn't be investing massive amounts in Dynasty because he doesn't have top 50 upside. But he does have top 75, I think, is probably where he tops out if he can get to 27 or 28 minutes. His per 36 numbers, 13 and 10 with 1.5 blocks and 1.3 steals, getting 58% from the field. And the steal numbers are a real key thing for him. And that's something that has been consistent throughout his career. He's been at almost one steal or over per game, per 36 minutes throughout his entire career. So it's something that he does do. He does get the steals. And as a big man, there aren't many of those centers who really excel in that area. And he is one of those players. Miles Turner. Loved when Miles Turner got picked. I thought he was going to be a fantasy stud no matter what team he went to at some point in the future. Ended up in Indiana and struggled early on. Did not get the minutes, and then had a broken thumb that kept him out 4 to 5 weeks. Came back in and struggled again to get some playing time early. But then they unleashed him and played the Twin Towers look of Mahinmi and Turner as the 4 and the 5. Turner had some big games. He also had some struggles at times, and that's pretty understandable for a rookie. On-off numbers looked really bad, and minus 6, that's not great. But fantasy-wise, yeah, that's really encouraging. 120th in 9-cat leagues, 134th in 8-cat leagues. Yeah, a jump of about 20 spots when we look at pre versus post All-Star numbers. And he's got a game that really, really lends itself to fantasy basketball. He played 67 games, again, missed that month or so with his thumb problem, and only 23 minutes a night, but averaged 10.3 points, had 5.6 rebounds, and got 1.6 blocks. He shot 49 from the field, he shot 72 from the free throw line. Now, areas that he can improve on. He can hit threes. Now, he only hit his threes at 20% this season. He can hit them. He can hit them at 35, 36%. He can be a guy that averages 0.5 threes a game. He can score more than this. And this is 10 points in 23 minutes. Play him 30 minutes, which should be the aim for next season. And then we're going to see 14 to 15 points. We're going to see 7 rebounds. We're going to see 2-plus blocks. And getting a guy who hits threes, gets 2-plus blocks, and shoots close to 80% from the free throw line and 50% from the field, it is a rare bird in the NBA. And Turner is a rare bird. He had some concerns coming into the draft with athleticism and, well, not athleticism, with athletic gait and the way that he ran led into injuries. It seemed to have been corrected. They had extensive work on that prior to the draft process. It worked out in his favor, and he looked really good. Advanced numbers, if we look at what Miles Turner, how he looked on this team, it's not good. A negative 2.3 box score plus minus, but again, I've stressed this on many podcasts. He was a 1.4 defensive box score plus minus, negative 3.7 offensively. You are beyond a plus as a defensive player. And as a rookie, that is key. He was second on the team in defensive box score plus minus. That just doesn't happen all that often. He had 2.3 win shares defensively, which again was in the top five on this team. He finished in win shares per 48. He was pretty decent, middle of the pack on this team, and above average. And that's pretty much all you can hope for, an above average PER. And he can take that true shooting up to 56-57%. Hit his threes. Hit his free throws at a better than 72% clip. Get two blocks a game. Miles Turner has got top 50 written all over him. It might not come next season, but I would not be shocked if it did. And he really, realistically, could be a top 30 player. I put tremendous value on Miles Turner. I think that that combination of threes, blocks, both percentages, and scoring and rebounding, we're talking about, you know, big numbers. He doesn't steal the ball very much, and that's fine. That's not where his strength lies. But those other areas, getting that combination together, is going to make him a super rare player in fantasy, and I have really high hopes. Again, don't expect the top 30 numbers to come, if they do come, within the next 3 years, but he is a real chance to be a top 50 guy next season. And if he's not a top 80 guy, I think I'll be surprised. I imagine he becomes their starting center and starts to approach 30 minutes a night. And when he starts getting to 32, 33, then we're in lookout mode. And he could be a real dominant sort of player in fantasy leagues for years to come. CJ Miles. A pretty typical CJ Miles season. Started off the season just shooting the lights out. He was playing in that small ball lineup with Paul George at the four. He was the starting three, and he was a must-own player. He was hitting threes, he was getting steals, and he's a player who threatens to be a two steals, two triples per game sort of guy. He was scoring, the percentages were okay, but as per usual, CJ Miles fluffed. He dropped off, he got injured, and that's just what CJ Miles does. It's just, he gets hot, and when he gets hot, you add him, and you go, you know what, I'm happy with this, let's run with CJ Miles. He's giving me my two steals, he's giving me two threes, he's scoring, he's doing everything. And when it falls off, you go, well, you can just take a seat for the next 2-3 weeks because you're not going to do anything. And then you're going to get hurt, and then you're not going to come back, and then it's going to be all over. And that's exactly how CJ Miles' season looked. He was the 148th ranked player for the season in 9-cat, 151 for 8-cat league, and was actually a negative 3.6 in his on-off numbers. But overall, he only played 22 minutes a night, and that's because of that significant drop-off he had after the first month of the season. Averaged 11 points, but still in 22 minutes, hit two threes a game. Had 2.8 rebounds and got your 0.8 steals, 40% from the field, 75% from the line, and then hit 35% from three. Is there any reason to believe that Miles will be really any different next season? Yes, he's 29 years old. He's on a pretty, you know, friendly contract for next season at just $4.5 million. If the Pacers decide to go to that small ball Paul George at the four lineup, well, then Miles is going to get more minutes. He's going to play more than 21. He might play 25 or 26 minutes a night, unless the Pacers with pick 20 pick a wing that they decide they want to get out there. They might pick a DeAndre Bembry. They might pick a Taurean Prince. Yeah, they might pick one of these guys, and Taurean Prince wouldn't be a bad fit actually on this team in terms of a small ball three or four guy that can grab some rebounds. But they might get a guy that goes in and plays 25 minutes and splits that time with CJ Miles. That's a possibility they pick at pick 20. I reckon that in that pick 20 there's a whole bunch of wings. Malcolm Brogdon, although probably a little bit early for him, in that sort of zone in the draft. That I reckon that's the sort of player they might be looking for. So that might impact Miles. Is he going to be a 12-team league guy next year? I'd say he has a chance to be at times. Would I draft him in a 12-team league? I would say probably not at this point, because I just think that the fluctuation in what he does is so vast and is so common that, yeah, that's fine. I've drafted him. He was great for 3 weeks and then he's gone. And I just don't see him ever maintaining top 80 value or anything along those lines. I think he's solid and he's going to be like a 16-team staple for the next 3 years, maybe even a 14-teamer for the next 1 or 2 years, but it should start to drop off after that. And he does what he does, and he does it decently well. And if you need threes, he's a great source, and he can get steals, and he doesn't turn the ball over, and he scores okay, and that's all fine and well and good. But you just need to temper your expectations. When he has a hot streak, he's probably going to get cold at some point, and the cold streak's probably going to be lasting longer than what the hot streak is. Defensively, he was actually a negative in box score plus minus, which is something that you don't expect from him because he's a pretty good defender, but his defensive win shares were higher than his offensive win shares. So I wouldn't be... And that's the thing with these advanced stats. You can look at it and go, look at that, negative defensively, and then look at another one, he's a positive. I think it's when you see multiple stats lining up, telling you the same thing, screaming at you, Dame Lillard's a bad defender, look at this, look at this, look at this, look at this. Yep, and that's when you go, okay, not a good defender. But sometimes these things, and it's all to be used in context as well. Miles is, I think, an average to above average defender. Some metrics like him, some don't. He's an okay shooter, 55% true shooting, not bad for a wing who's only shooting 40% from the field. Yeah, 55 true shooting's pretty good. But he is a player who has that streakiness to his game. Jordy Hill. Again, really red hot to start the season, played a lot of minutes. And that was mainly when Miles Turner was out. He was getting, he'd come off the bench, he'd start, and he'd play, and he'd get a double-double in 22 minutes. And you'd go, what's happening here? Where's this Jordan Hill coming from? And he was showing flashes of this for seasons, especially when he was with the Lakers. But he's never really shown the ability to lock down a big-minute role. He was 188th this season, down from 140th last season. A big drop-off post-All-Star, though. Went from 152nd pre to 264th. He was out of the rotation after the All-Star break. And that's when the Pacers really started rolling with the Miles Turner, Yan Mihimi frontcourt and giving those guys significant minutes and getting Solomon Hill more into the rotation. Hill was a negative 1.3 in his on-off numbers. He was fourth on the team, but third if you don't count Rakeem Christmas in win shares per 48. Defensively, he was a positive in both defensive win shares and box score plus minus, and almost sort of an average sort of contributor. He reminds me a little bit of Ed Davis in that he just fits in that bench role, in that 20-minute sort of role, and can do some things. He played 20 minutes a game in his 78 games, 8.3 points, 6 rebounds, half a steal, half a block, 51 and 72. They're just average sort of numbers that it's going to restrict him to deep leagues as a deep league draft option. And if there's injuries and he's forced into 25 minutes a night, then he creeps up into being a 12-team guy, that a 12-team curiosity, who can get a double-double, who can block a couple of shots, who can score big-time occasionally. Doesn't happen often, but it is something that can happen. So he is a player that's intriguing. Now, whether he returns to the team, I think they'd like to bring him back, especially if Mihinmi leaves, which appears likely at this point. But maybe he gets more money somewhere else. So he's going to, wherever he goes, he's going to fit into that role and play that bench sort of big man role, who's ready to go and play as a starter when necessary. Rod Stuckey. Not one of my favorite players, that's for sure. He had a bit of a renaissance last season, especially shooting the ball when he started hitting threes like it was no one's business, but big drop-off this year, and that's, again, due to the return of George, due to the addition of Monte Ellis. He went from 150th last season to 263rd this year, had a negative 2.7 in his on-off numbers, and he averaged just 22 minutes a game. 65 games and only 8.6 points. He hit 0.4 triples, 2.6 rebounds, 2.4 assists and 0.7 steals, shooting 41 and 81. And true to form, he shot 27% from three. So last season was just a complete anomaly. He shot 39% from three last year. 39. This year, 27. The year before, 27. The year before, 30. The year before, 32. The year before, 29. Out of nowhere, he hit threes last season. It did completely drop off. It's the first time he's been in single-digit scoring in quite a while. The drop-off for Rod Stuckey is here. It's not going to get any better. I wouldn't have thought it. At age 30, he's got another 1 year on his deal left at $7 million. Yes, he'll be that interesting guy that can handle the ball a little bit, play a bit of backup too, and get around 20 minutes a night. I don't see his role really changing too much, but I also don't see him getting any better next season, and he'll be a guy that really shouldn't be in consideration for any leagues outside of extraordinarily deep ones. Again, if he cracks the top 200, you have to consider it a win for Stuckey at this point in his role, as his abilities start declining, and that's sort of where we're at with him. Maybe an injury or two opens up and he can come in and play 30 minutes a night and be successful, but I don't think your team's going to be successful if he's forced into that sort of a role. In terms of his advanced numbers, they weren't all that pretty. He was a negative offensively. He was a negative defensively. He was really down the bottom in win shares per 48. I think he was the second worst player on this team of the regular contributors. That's not ideal, obviously. A below average PER, below average true shooting, win shares of just 2 combined for the season, not one of the top numbers on the team. Actually finished 10th on the team. Not the best season for Stuckey, and I do think that his decline is definitely on the way. Lavoie Allen is a guy I really did like in Philadelphia, similar to a Jordan Hill, similar to a Ed Davis. Again, a guy, an impact energy rebounder player who plays some defense but might struggle to play 30 minutes a night. On-off numbers, really impressive. Led the team with a plus 7. At 253rd, he finished this season in NICAT, 257th in 8 CAT leagues. And he was a guy that if you knew that he was going to get minutes, then you'd have to consider using him. But that's the problem, is that you never really knew when Lavoie Allen was going to get minutes. And he had stints as a starter. He had stints where he was out of the rotation. He ended up just playing 19 minutes a game. But he averaged 5 points, but 5.2 rebounds in 19 minutes. And that's a key number. Half a block, 0.3 steals, and 51%. Poor free throw shooter at 63. But there are some things that Lavoie Allen does and does well. And defend is one of them. Second on the team in box score plus minus with Miles Turner, and almost gave him a positive box score plus minus at a negative 0.6, given how bad he was offensively. Had one of the best win shares on the team. He was sixth in that stat. He was seventh in win shares per 48 with an above average number. And if with him there, the necessity to bring back Jordan Hill probably isn't that high, but again, they're probably going to lose Mahinmi, so, and they're probably going to lose Solomon Hill as well, so retaining some of these players that they have for depth might be key. So Lavoie Allen, he's not that old, he's only 26, so I do place a little bit of faith in him, but not faith enough to think that he's ever going to become a top 150 player. But he could have a season where he's a top 220, a top 200 guy, and that's okay for deeper leagues. But Lavoie Allen plays a role, and I'm just not ever sure he's ever going to get past that sort of role. Ty Lawson finished the season in Indiana. Started it in Houston, and let's be honest, it was just shit. A lot of people drafted Ty Lawson around pick 100. I was not someone who drafted him anywhere. I was not a fan of the combination of him in Houston whatsoever. Did not think that he was going to mesh with James Harden, and he didn't. He was really, really poor in Houston. Comes across to Indiana and just barely saw the court. Had an injury almost the first game that he played, ankle problem, came back, and just did nothing. He had a negative 0.3 on-off for Indiana, so that's not too bad. But for the season, he was the 319th ranked player. That's terrible. 272nd in 8 CAT leagues. Again, terrible. And what was it with Ty Lawson? Is it mental? You have to think a massive component of it is mental. He played 73 games for the season, but only 20 minutes. 5 points a game. 5 points. 0.5 threes, 1.7 rebounds, 3.4 assists, 0.8 steals, 39%, 67% from the line, and 32% from three. These are bafflingly bad numbers. Now, he went from Denver being the number one ball handler, the number one guy, the number one scorer. He went to Houston where, even though you're starting with James Harden, you're not touching the ball. You're not holding it. You're not running everything through yourself. And goes to Indiana, he's like the fourth, fifth banana. It was never going to work out that well. How did he look in terms of the splits between the two cities? Really, really similar, especially if we look on a per 36-minute basis. Points, basically the same. Turnovers, the same. Steals, the same. Blocks, the same. He averaged way more assists per 36 in Indiana, 8.7 versus 5.5, and more rebounds in Indiana, but still shot terrible percentages in both places. But overall, he saw an improvement in Indiana. He wasn't great, though. I think that's fair to say. And it wasn't just the fact that his minutes dropped, because they did. But per 36, his points dropped 6 points per game from 15 to 9. He hit the same threes. His assists dropped by 3.7. And his percentages dropped 4% from the field. He dropped 4% from the free throw line. He dropped 2% from the three-point line. Ty Lawson's an unrestricted free agent now. Where do we see him ending up? I would not want to have him as my starting point guard. I know that much, given all his troubles, his mental issues, his locker room fit issues. I wouldn't want to have him as a starting point guard. Sure, he can come in as a backup, but Ty Lawson, he's 28 years old. He's not young. He's definitely not old. And you could get him as a three-year guy who plays 17 to 21 minutes a night and be relatively happy with that. But he can't play the two. He can't shoot. His strength comes from being able to drive. And he was a point guard who was almost a 50% shooter for a big stretch in his career. And to shoot less than 40% is dreadfully bad. but he's been on a downward trend with his field goal percentage. We look back to 2010-11, he shot 50% from the field. 49, 46, 43, 44, 39. Basically trending downwards every season. His free throws, again, went from 76, 82, 76, 80, 73, 69, dropping down. His three-pointers, 40, 37, 37, 36, 34, 32, dropping down. The decline is absolutely real for Ty Lawson. I would not be touching him in a standard league next season. If he goes to the Knicks and becomes their starting point guard, I might take a round 11 pick on him. I won't have much hope in it, and he's definitely not becoming a top 50 guy again. There is no chance that Ty Lawson becomes a top 50 guy again. No chance. He goes to the Knicks, he goes to the Nets. Maybe he becomes a starting point guard, and then you'd have to consider him in the top 100 or around that 100 mark. But with all the declines across the board, assist rates, shooting percentages, and great question here, great comment from Joseph Diffenbach, says Ty Lawson needs to go to a team with a strong coach. Do you not think that Frank Vogel was a strong enough coach for him? Who's it, Joseph? You're obviously listening. You should hear me talk Ty Lawson. Who do you think is a strong enough coach to deal with him? Miami as a backup point guard? Would he fit there? The Clippers under Doc Rivers as a backup point guard? Austin Rivers is there, though, obviously. San Antonio? They wouldn't tolerate any of his bullshit. Maybe he sits there, but that's Patty Mills' job. Where does he go? Who's got... Minnesota? No, maybe. Maybe they go to Minnesota. Maybe they don't have faith in Tyus Jones. He's not getting a starting job, I don't think, unless it's Brooklyn or New York. He's not supplanting any of the other starting point guards in the NBA, and that is sort of where we're at with Ty. Complete sidebar here, but I put this out on Twitter today and was thinking about Rajon Rondo. Which team does Rajon Rondo, this is the question I asked, which team does Rajon Rondo go to that he makes better next season? Got a lot of, and again, this is educational to me because it helps me frame a market for Rondo. A lot of people still think he's really good, and they still really like Rajon Rondo. Some of the responses I got, the Jazz, a couple of people, he should go to the Jazz. Oh, I couldn't think of a worse, well, no, I could think of lots of worse ones. I don't like him with the Jazz. They want Exum to be the guy. Yeah. Rondo, yeah, look, he put up assist numbers. Absolutely. Cool. Terrible player, though. Really bad defense, really horrible offense. He goes assist hunting, he goes stat hunting. He got a lot of triple doubles, and that's why they're a misleading stat, because he was really bad. One of the worst defensive point guards in the NBA. Offensively, he was sluggish as well. He slows things down. He gets no movement in the modern offense. Yeah, he could go there, but that means you take the ball out of the hands of all the options that they've got. And not just scoring options, and the person I was having an argument back and forth, not an argument, a discussion back and forth with, again, we're sidetracking from the Pacers here, but saying, oh yeah, but Rondo can get the ball to Haywood and Hood in open spots. I mean, that's fine, but I want the ball in Hood's hands because he can score and he can create. I want the ball in Haywood's hands because he can score and he can dish and he can create. I want the ball in Alec Burks' hands so he can drive and he can create. I want the ball in Dante Exum's hands so he can develop and he can create. And Exum is already a better defender than what Rajon Rondo is at the point guard spot. Shelvin Mack's potentially a better player than Rondo. Maybe that's pushing it. The only place I could think that I would think that Rondo is worth a go is a short-term deal with the Nets. He went to the Knicks. I'd prefer they give Jerry and Grant the ball. Rondo, if he gets a starting job in one of those two New York teams, much like Ty Lawson, he's going to put up fantasy stats, but he's also going to be a really bad player, and that's, they're different things. You can have good players like George Hill who don't put up fantasy stats. You can have bad players who do put up fantasy stats, like Rondo, like Tony Roten, but eventually it's going to catch up with Rondo. I don't think he's going to be back in Sacramento, but I want to hear, if you didn't see my tweet today, I want to hear what you guys have to say. Which team does Rondo make better? And some of the other responses I had. The Cavs. Three people said, the Cavs. Move Kyrie. They need a true point guard. Move Kyrie to the shooting guard spot. Put him on the Cavs. I could not pick my jaw up off the floor. You know who the point guard is on that team? LeBron. You're going to take the ball out of LeBron James's hands to give it to Rajon Rondo. And then you're concerned about Kyrie Irving's defense. You hear about Kyrie Irving's defense. Rondo's is as bad, if not worse. And he can't shoot. And he'd be taking the ball out of LeBron James's hands. Doesn't work. Nets, Knicks, understandable. I can sort of see that. Someone said the Pelicans because of Drew Holiday's injury history. No thanks. Rondo used to be one of my favorite players in the NBA. He was the first NBA jersey I bought along with Derrick Rose. shows how good my taste was 4 years ago. I just can't. I can't see it. Sorry for that complete off-trackness. Where are we? I've lost where I am. Solomon Hill. Really impressive on-off. 2.8. He was a guy that I thought was an absolute stinker last season. He got an opportunity with Paul George out to be a starter and really struggled with it. But to have to decline his rookie option was a terrible mistake. He was out of the rotation to start the season, and then he really started to pick it up and was really good in the playoffs. He finished the season as the 282nd ranked fantasy player. Whatever, not good. But we're talking a 70 spot jump that he had post All-Star when he started getting into the rotation at the expense of Lavoy Allen, at the expense of Jordan Hill. He plays as a small ball four really well, and if they're going to go small, Solomon Hill would be a great option. Unfortunately, there is no chance. No chance. I wish I had the Vince McMahon music here, because I'll be playing his song right now. And maybe I need to get that for a podcast. There is no chance in hell that Solomon Hill is back with the Pacers next season. Zero. If he is back with the Pacers next season, I don't know what I'll do. I'll do something stupid. There is no chance he is back with the Pacers. He played 65 games this season. He went down from 29 minutes to 16 minutes and averaged 4.6 points. He had 3 rebounds. He had 0.6 steals. And Josh, is Solomon Hill. He's averaging 16 minutes and 4.6 points. Who cares if he's not back? Oh, I sort of care. 0.6 steals in 16 minutes is pretty impressive. He shot 45% up from 40 the year before. He shot 38% from 3, which is a key number. He was 33 the year before. He took his free throw percentage up to 88, so he's not a liability there. Per 36, he looked really impressive to me. I really was happy with what Solomon Hill could do, and I was not his biggest fan. I thought that his end to the season was really, really superb in terms of what he was able to do advanced numbers. Defensively, he was a huge positive. He was an overall average box score plus minus of 0, but a nice win share, above average win shares per 48, actually 6th on the team, ahead of a guy like Miles Turner, ahead of CJ Miles, and when he's your fifth best player in terms of win shares per 48, you would want to bring him back, I would have thought. But they're just not going to have that ability due to a really poor front office decision. And I know I keep harping on it, but it was one of the worst decisions. Although really low impact, they're going to be worse without him. I'll put it that way. And that's something I never really thought I'd say about Solomon Hill, who had no chance at all in his first rookie season, played 82 games and 29 minutes in his second season, didn't do much there, and struggled early on this season, but came back. And over the last couple of months of the season, he was playing almost 30 minutes a night. In fact, his last 12 games of the season, he played 30 minutes, 11 points, 2 threes, 5.5 rebounds, a steal, 51 and 86, shooting 55% from 3. And that's a small sample size, but his last 26 games, he shot 46% from 3. Big numbers. And would he ever be a top 100 fantasy player? No, not at all. Would he be a 16-team league guy in a 28-minute role? Yeah, I think that he would be. In fact, his last 2 months that I talked about before, he was the 88th ranked player. So maybe he could be a top 100 player. But we're never going to see that on this team, unfortunately. Now, whether he goes somewhere else and gets a similar role, I think that's probably a stretch. But I really did like what he was able to do. And a big, big late season surge. It's going to see him make some pretty significant money for a guy who hasn't made a huge amount in his career today. He should probably equal his career earnings in the first year of his next deal. Who we got next? Rakeem Christmas. I was dying for this guy to play all season. I wanted all these guys who were active on a roster to play. It took until the last game of the season. I don't know why they were so hesitant to play him. He played one game. Yeah, that's really not much to really go on, is it? He played 6 minutes in that game. He did boast a PER of 32. I heard that's pretty good. He had an offensive box score plus minus of 9.7. That's also pretty good. But we can't really gain much from looking at what Rakeem Christmas did. Yeah, he had 4 points in his 6 minutes. He hit his only 2 shots. He did nothing else. Let's have a look at what he did in the D-League. That might give us more of an idea of what we can expect from him. And if Jordan Hill moves, which is a possibility, if Yamahimi goes, the minutes are going to open up for Rakeem Christmas. And I do think that Christmas can be, and saying Christmas just sounds so stupid, but I think that I think that Christmas can be a guy that it becomes a 16-team league guy. It becomes, at his peak, probably a back-end 14-team league guy in about 3 years, 4 years' time. And if you're in a real deep dynasty league, he could be available. I'd be okay with acquiring him just because I think some playing time is going to open up. He played 48 games for Fort Wayne last year. He averaged 14 points. He had 7 rebounds. He had 0.6 steals and 1.7 blocks. He actually took a few threes. He hit one out of his 4 threes, but 47 from the field. He shot 73 from the line, so pretty solid numbers there. And I thought overall he was pretty impressive. Slightly below average PER. His box score plus minus was not great, but again, as a defender, a positive in the D-League. I think there's a lot to like about Christmas, and the way that I think that he can go, and that should make Jordan Hill expendable for this team. It shouldn't have made Solomon Hill expendable, but it should make Jordan Hill expendable. And I do think that he can work his way into a role where he plays more than 6 minutes next season. Be shocked if he didn't play more than 6 minutes. And I think that he should be finding himself in a role where maybe he plays 12 minutes a night. Maybe he gets to 15. And is there a possibility that he becomes a starting power forward next to Miles Turner at some point in the future? Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. I do really like Rakeem Christmas. And it helps that his name is Christmas because I do like saying it. And it helps that I've got him in the Red Rock Dynasty League as well on a $1 contract for 4 years. I'm pretty happy about that. But I think it's probably going to take 3 years for him to really even come close to sniffing the top 100. But still, there's lots of leagues that go deeper than that. And you should be able to have some use from Rakeem Christmas. Glenn Robinson III. I don't really think there's much to say with him. He was the 372nd player in 9-cat, 386th in 8-cat. He had a negative 5.7 on-off number. Nothing really interesting. 49 games, 11 minutes, 3.6 points, 0.3 steals, 44 and 70. Did shoot 38% from three, so that's obviously a pretty nice number. Below average win shares per 48. Defensively, he was a break-even in his box score plus-minus, so that's okay as a young guy. But he is 22 years old already. Don't have huge hopes for Glenn Robinson III, so I wouldn't be putting too much faith on him or in him. Joseph Divenback has a question about, Joseph, this is about Rondo, the teams that with coaches. Okay, Mavs, Nets, Grizzlies, Kings, Sixers, and Knicks. Okay. Mavs? He's not going to the Mavs. Nets, yep. Grizzlies, what, assuming Conley leaves? Kings? No, he was terrible. Sixers, yeah, I can understand the Sixers there as well, but hopefully they're able to swing themselves a pick to get Chris Dunn. That would be pretty interesting. Anyway, chime in with your Rondo thoughts about what team can he possibly make better. I'm just not a fan. Joe Young. I am a fan of Mighty Joe Young. He was a second round draft choice out of Oregon. I think he plays a bit of the one and the two. I know he plays a bit of the one and the two. Not really that much exciting from him this season. 417th in 9-cat leagues, 400th in 8-cat leagues. He only played 9 minutes a game, averaged 3.6 points, 1.5 assists, 37 and 82. But the 22% from 3, the 37% from the field, they're bad. But he's a rookie. They'll jump 6 or 7% next season. He'll be a 30% 3-point shooter. He'll be a 42% field goal percent shooter. But 82% from the line is good. 1.5 assists in 8 minutes is pretty okay as well. Per 36, the numbers look great. 15, 5, and 6, 1.5 steals, a 3 a game. They're really good numbers. And they can, I think that he can be a player who starts in this league. Now, George Hill, I talked about him already having that situation where his contract's going to expire next season. He's going to be 31, 32 years old. Do they start grooming Young for that role? It's a possibility. Now, he played a couple of games where he played some decent minutes. I'm just looking through his game log at the moment. It wasn't many of them, but he did have a game on the 22nd of the 1st against the Warriors. He played 28 minutes. He had 16, 3, and 8. He had a steal and a 3. And that's what I'm talking about with Joe Young. Now, he didn't do it very often, but he did have 3 games in a row of double-digit scoring. He went 15-7 against the Nuggets, then he went 11-3-5 with 2 steals against the Suns in 19 minutes, and then that's 16-3-8 against the Warriors. I really do like Joe Young. I think there's a lot to like about him moving forward. Win shares, he was absolutely dreadful. Box scores, he was the worst on the team. Box score plus minus, he was the worst on the team. He had a below 10 PER. He had a 43% true shooting percentage. Nothing there is appealing. But He had one of the highest assist percentages on the team, second behind Ty Lawson. So ahead of Ellis, ahead of George, ahead of Hill, ahead of Stuckey. And he's got room to grow. Now, he is 23 years old, so that's somewhat of a concern when you're talking about a guy who's going to need to develop because he's already old. But I do think that when he gets to his age 25 season, we might see him as a starter. Now, none of his player comps really look impressive at all. We've got guys like Rocco Jukic, Troy Hudson, Nolan Smith, D. Brown, probably the best out of that group. Kenny Anderson's in there, Tate George, but no names that really stand out as being great. But I do have faith in Young. Maybe that he won't become a starter. I think there's a chance that he becomes a starter, but I think that he can work his way into being a 20-minute-a-game backup, a 23-minute-a-game backup, who can be somewhat of a scorer and a guy that distributes. And when Monte Ellis falls off, when George Hill disappears, it's set up for Young to really come in and start to play it decently well. He's on a great contract, $1 million next season. He's got a non-guaranteed million the next year, and then a team option $1 million the year after that. And by that time, he could be a backup playing in a league that backups are getting $8 million, and he's getting $1 million and getting 20 minutes a night. I do like his ability to be a top 200 player at some point in his career, potentially even a top 150 guy, with upside to go higher if everything breaks right. It's probably a 10% chance that it breaks right, but I do think that Joe Young is part of this group of really impressive point guards out of this draft class. And I think that he is a guy that I traded for him in a dynasty league because I do believe in Mighty Joe Young. I do think that there is something to look forward to with him. Shane Whittington, the last player on this team, I don't really need to go too much into Whittington. He played 6 minutes a game in his seven games, 1.7 rebounds, doesn't block shots, doesn't shoot. I'm not interested in Shane Whittington. There's nothing to really get me too excited about. One of the worst in terms of win shares, and another negative guy, a really negative guy, offensive box score plus minus. But the thing that stands out, a positive on defense. So maybe there's something to work with him, but I just think he's so far down the totem pole that his best bet is ever to be a top 300 sort of player. I think that's probably where he tops out. That's it. That's the Indiana Pacers team done. I'm going to take a quick break, and then I'm going to be back to look at your questions regarding this team and answer them, hopefully. Hopefully well.
While we wait on the bass and drums, I'll sing of love and you from afar. Well, here they come in now, me and the sky are on a roll. As we hit the halftime break, the chorus lets you know you can't see what I see.
Chunk of them during the actual course of the podcast. Rob Percher, I need a pronunciation guide for all my listeners. If the Pacers go with a small lineup, will Turner be the only big man who can be owned that produces at a consistent level? Absolutely. He's not likely to be back, in my opinion, so it's going to be Turner all the way. Daniel Evkovich, I'm definitely keeping Paul George, but I would love to know how high a ceiling you think Turner has as a top center, and can Ellis be relevant again? Turner, touched on, top 50 upside, top 30 even potentially. He's that good, I think. Monte Ellis, relevant. He was relevant, and when you're inside the top 100, you're relevant, and I think he'll be that again next season. But I think the drop-off after that will start to happen. Joseph Diffenbach, Will youngsters Mighty Joe Young and Miles Turner get more consistent minutes? Turner, absolutely. I think he approaches 30 minutes a game. Joe Young, yes, I do think that he plays a slightly bigger role, but I don't think that his bigger role comes until the third season. Big Barry Baker, the podcast question maker, he says, can Miles Turner, and he calls him Pineapple Head, never heard that before, but thanks, Barry, can he become a top 50 player? Yep, absolutely. Irv Dizzle, good name, Irv. Minutes per game projection for Miles Turner? I think that 29 is probably, at this very early stage, where I'd be looking at, but I think 29 minutes is what we should be looking for, maybe 28. An unrestricted free agent impact on George Hill's potential numbers. I'm not really sure that they go on target unless Mike Conley says, I want to come across here, then they might consider that. But I think that George Hill stays that consistent guy again for next season. They really do value his shooting and his defense. He's one of the more underrated point guards out there. Grant Afseth says, do you think bringing back Jan Mahimi as a backup center is worth it with Miles Turner as the starter? You're not going to be able to do it because Mahimi's going to get offers to be a starter somewhere, and you're not going to spend $15 million on Mahimi to be your backup. Would it be worth it? No doubt. Absolutely it would be worth it. You're just not going to be able to do it. Grant just peppering me with questions. He says, isn't Monte Ellis still an NBA starter? Seems like a perfect sixth man. Well, I'm not sure he's a perfect sixth man, but yes, he is still an NBA starter level player, just not on a good team, not on a top four team. I don't think he's a starter level player. And yes, he probably would suit a sixth man role well in a 22, 23 minute role. The problem is, would Monte Ellis accept a sixth man role? And I would have to say at this point, no. He just wouldn't. He just is too stubborn with his shot selection. Yes, he gets assists, but he gets them on his own terms, much like Rajon Rondo. And I don't believe that he is a starter. Yeah, he's a starter, but he's not a good one. He's a bottom half shooting guard starter. And yes, sixth man would be a better role for him, but I don't know how well he'd take to it. Grant Afseth finishes off with another question. Grant just destroying the questions today. Do they need role player upgrades on their bench? Should they trust the development of their young bench guys and say, well, they don't have many guys. They've got Turner, who'll be a starter, and they've got Joe Young as a young bench guy. They don't have anyone else as young bench players. So I don't think they trust Glenn Robinson III, and they shouldn't. Shane Whittington, I don't think they should either. They're going to get a guy that I think will be a wing in that pick 20, and he'll play some bench minutes. And yes, I do think they do need to pick up some extra things. But Rod Stuckey's going to be there for another year. You know, Lavoy Allen's going to be there. And they're decent role players. Stuckey did struggle, but Allen, I think, is a really good role player as that backup center. CJ Miles does what he does as a floor spacer and a part-time starter. Yeah, every team would look to do role player upgrades, but in terms of relying on their young bench guys, they can't because they don't have enough. They don't have enough of them. And I misattributed that question about Monte Ellis still an NBA starter to Grant Afseth. It was in fact from Ethan Hutchins. So Ethan, I apologize. Seems like a perfect sixth man. That was your question, and you heard me answer it already. All right, we are done with the Indiana Pacers podcast today, guys. There was a bit of rambling at the start talking about the Dynasty League. Congratulations to the 29 other people who are in that league, and I am starting that second league. So if you want in, applications will close on Sunday. And again, remember, you might not get in if you send an application because there are so many that I've got to sift through, but I'm giving you an extra chance now to get another application in. The guys who were in the first league, you will get emails sent out within the week or so, just sort of detailing what's happening with the league. Send me an email, redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com if you want into these leagues. Follow me on Twitter @redrock_bball. Subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on YouTube, give a thumbs up on YouTube. Just watch the show, download the episode. Even if you're not listening to them, just download them. It helps the numbers tremendously. And don't forget Fantrax. That's the place where you want to go set up your league. And that's where we're going to be setting up all of the Red Rock listener leagues this season. We are done today, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.